So as I said yesterday, I basically just wanted to ask you the questions that I put in the email. But for the record, could you say your name and either when and where you were born or when and where you came to MSU?
Oh, well, my name is Mary Elizabeth Lee Brady. I have a doctorate from Union Institute, Cincinnati, Ohio. I was born 5/11/1928 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Oh, interesting.
I came to Michigan State in 1972.
Okay.
Someone submitted my name, and the Department of Pediatrics, College of Human Medicine, recruited me.
Oh.
And so I came for an interview. I
Uh-huh.
also was in the process of getting a divorce, and my
Oh.
ex-husband lived in Flint, Michigan, and he and I thought it would be nice for me to be close to my in-laws.
Interesting.
So that sort of motivated me to come at least look at Michigan. And when I went, it didn't make any difference to me. I sort of liked the job, but I had a lot of other offers. And I brought the children the second time, and they just fell in love with East Lansing.
Well, good.
So they made the decision that I should move to Michigan. And I started work as a clinical social worker.
Oh.
I didn't have my PhD then, and worked in Olin Center as a social worker.
Okay.
And then someone decided that they would like to have me go to OSHER, the Office of Health Service Education and Research, with Dr. Katz over in City Hall. So I went there and engaged in behavioral science. And what else did I do? I started a clinical practice, and then it occurred to me, let's see what happened. Well, the first year I was there, I got a pink slip from the Dean Hunt.
Really?
And I went in there, was fit to be tied. I
I
was
bet.
enraged, and I said, "What is this, a pink slip? And what is this contract?" Because I had left a very good job and got a salary decrease from Illinois. And I certainly wouldn't have taken a temporary job if I had known it, with two children. And so he said, "Oh no, that was the way it was set up," which I didn't know. And I said, "Well, I can't have this. And what can I do about it?" He said, "Well, if you will get a PhD, then you'll become an assistant professor in the tenure track." So I said, "Well, I want one of those."
I see.
So I went full time in the College of Human Medicine while I pursued my PhD in Cincinnati.
Wow.
I didn't want to go to Ann Arbor because my children were in their teenage years, and I didn't trust them alone, being away from them for any length of time.
Those must have been quite some years. That's
So anyhow, I did that, and I had, gee, I can't think of the man's name now.
doesn't matter.
The associate dean of human medicine was the chair of my committee.
I see.
Why can't I think of his name? Anyhow, you can find it.
That's quite all
But
right.
anyhow, he was chair of my committee. Ralph Bonner was also on my committee. And then I had other people from Cincinnati Institute on the committee. Anyhow, I finally finished that after 3 years. And then Dean Hunt kept his word.
Okay.
I went into the tenure stream. and I worked like a dog. And 3 years later, well, I was promoted after 2 years to associate professor, and then after 3 years, I went into full professor.
Uh-huh.
My first job then, well, after, when I was in graduate school, Dean Hunt suggested that I might want to work for pediatrics. Bill Weil seemed to be interested in having me work in the pediatric clinic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my specialty was family and children, so that was fine.
Great.
So I went to pediatrics half-time and OSHA half-time, and then while I was in pediatrics, Tom Kirschbaum decided that he wanted a piece of me. So I moved from OSHA to OB-GYN, and eventually I liked OB-GYN because I was able to maintain my clinical practice.
Uh-huh.
And also was able to charge fee for service, so I had a little bit of revenue coming in from the clinic. And so I went to OB-GYN full time. And then, in the 1980s, I don't know, low 83, 84, sometime, someone over in the president's office interviewed me and asked me if I would be interested in the faculty grievance office.
Do you remember who that was?
Well, I think Ralph Bonner put my name forward, but it was Bob Banks who carried a lot of weight.
Uh-huh.
And he thought that I would be a good person. And I thought so too, because my entire background was interviewing and problem solving and dispute resolution. You can't handle marriages and divorces without having some knowledge of dispute resolution.
Uh-huh.
Anyhow, I happily went over to faculty grievance, and I really enjoyed that. I did remarkably well with minorities and females, and for the most part, was able to set a track record for myself and for the grievance office. I found a lot of problems, and I tried to organize it as best I could.
What sort of problems?
Well, there weren't any definitions for anything.
Uh-huh.
Most of the grievances were filed around salary disputes.
Uh-huh.
And the department had no evaluation tools set up, no definitions of what the weights were going to be in their evaluation process.
Okay.
And it was pretty much left up to the chair to make an arbitrary decision. And most people went along with it, they care. Occasionally, someone would question why they would get a certain valuation when they thought their work was much much more superior to what they got. And so then I tried to help each department head set up their own evaluation tools.
Is this something you did on your own then, or as part of the job you went to these department chairs, or?
Well, I was already in the College of Human Medicine, so they didn't have any trouble understanding what I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was easy. I was very disappointed with the non-medical college, is what I want to say, behavioral science, PhD. After working so many years in medicine, I understood what it was to work 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And we were dedicated, and I was disappointed that so many of the PhDs had such soft jobs. And like, you know, somebody in history would have a lesson plan they prepared 20 years ago, and they were using the same lesson plan. So there were a lot of things that I had to try to subtly point out chairs and deans that in this day and time, people had to enhance their lesson plans on a regular basis. They just couldn't sit on their laurels.
Was this things that you brought to their attention or things that came up as you were responding to grievances that people brought to you? Or?
Yes, otherwise I would have no way of knowing.
Okay.
So as a grievance would come, it occurred to me there were a whole lot of other problems that was creating the problem that brought the grievance to me. And the resolution of the grievances, many of those problems were worked out, not all of them. But many of them. Some of the chairs and deans, both men and women, they weren't necessarily all white men, were recalcitrant and difficult and were determined to be in control, irrespective of what the rights were. And I would often have to work with them. And that's when I would eventually ask to call a grievance panel to help me make the decision. Because trying to negotiate was just, just a waste of time after a while.
What was your sense of the balance between hearings and this kind of informal dispute resolution?
Oh, I think the informal dispute resolution was 75%.
Uh-huh.
Many chairs and deans simply didn't get it. And once I would try to translate the other person's point of view and what their rights were, they didn't get it. And many of the chairs and deans were very conscientious people who wanted to do the right thing. They just, it's like, sometimes when you're in charge, you just are not sensitive to what your underlings are experiencing. And they would, and the other thing is that many of the departments had evaluation committees, but they were just were inactive. And they decided that maybe I decided that they should be active, because then a lot of these resolutions will not, I mean, a lot of these problems will not come to the faculty office.
You said it seemed like many or most of the problems related to salary?
I would say so.
Okay.
I would say so. But you see, it was very important for assistant professors, because that meant that they would not be able to get to the associate and then to the tenure track. And the associate for faculty was very important to them, because as the pressure of but the pressure to produce and the competition and the south, the financial crunch of the university, they would be asked to leave rather than be promoted. And so each tier had its own reasons for a good evaluation tool. So I lost my point. What else?
Did you have any sense that more problems were in certain colleges or areas than in others during your years? Or?
Yes. The College of Austin Patrick Medicine, I can't think of that man. Who was that man? And he was very nice, but he was just determined not to give a certain man, Dr. Mahoney, really an evaluation that was legitimate. And I worked very hard trying to tell him and his evaluation committee that if he had a set of criteria that this man should adhere to, then that criteria should be given weight. For instance, if this physician had a good rapport with the patient, and if that was one of the evaluation components, that it should have some kind of a weight. And all of these weights would tend to be 100%. And he just absolutely refused. And what would anger me and frustrate me and make me very unhappy was he would go over to Bob Banks, go to the provost, at that time it was David Scott, and oftentimes would go to Dr. Gaggio. And all these people would then call me in to make me accountable for what I was doing. And that really angered me. And I don't know that I ever resolved it. But the other colleges, particularly the cooperative extension, they really worked hard to increase their understanding of the evaluation process. The College of Education fairly well. I can't remember off the top of my head right now.
I was just wondering if you had any memory of particular areas that were more frequent problems or not.
That was a pain in my head. The pediatric department. I don't recall having any other impasses that were just so difficult. College of Business was very good, very good. As a matter of fact, like I said, urban development was fine. But all of them, it's sort of like you have to hit the donkey on the head to get their attention. Once it dawned on them, many of them didn't even know what the faculty grievance office was. Many of them hadn't even read the grievance procedure.
Was that your sense many times that people in the chairs or dean's offices just weren't unfamiliar with the grievance procedure?
Yes, and if they knew it, they hadn't read it. And of course, like I said, those that really wanted to do the right thing would read it and understood it and set about the business of changing how things went. But the most painful thing I told you I think the email I sent, the most painful experience for me was my secretary.
Really?
I didn't know. Well, I had been in the job 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I naively assumed that if I did a really good job, like I had done in the College of Medicine, I would be reappointed for another 5 years. And so I turned in my report and so forth and went down to Atlanta to my daughter's PhD graduation. And I called back, as I would every day, to the TMAR and asked her how things were going.
Right.
And she told me that I had not been appointed. I was so upset I had a heart attack. And so I was hospitalized for 3 weeks. And I finally got back to Lansing, and I don't know how it happened, but anyhow, I was given 3 months sick leave, so I stayed home. And David Scott had come to the house and visit me, and I was trying to explain to him why I could not understand, with the good track record that I had, why I was not appointed. And I just poured my heart out to this man and thought that he was going to be a liaison. Instead, he really did some, I don't know what he did, but he wasn't in my favor. And then when I got better, there was a secretarial strike. And Betty Timar, who at the beginning I had given her excellent ratings because I thought she was doing what she was supposed to be doing. But anyhow, she was out of the office for a period of time with this secretarial strike. And I went to personnel and asked them what I could do about it. And there wasn't anything I could do about it because she had a high position in the union. And I had given her these high ratings. I got myself in a double bond.
I gotcha.
But in the meantime, I had purchased a computer because I was just getting to learn about the computer. And I thought, now that would help her systemize and organize and categorize and everything else, all the work that I was doing. Plus, in fact, I would be able to set up a tracking system of what was going on. Because during this 5 years, I was always concerned about timeliness. And it seemed that whatever I did, it was barely timely. And I'm a very timely person, so I had to apologize all the time, and I couldn't understand this. I'm working 8 o'clock at night and taking work home, and I'm still not timely. So I got this computer, real fancy computer, and Betty never touched it. Well, anyhow, when she went to strike, something told me to go down to the office and go into her office, which I seldom did, and see where all these reports and if she had sent them out. Now that was about, must have been August, September, I don't know. But anyhow, there were reports that I had given her in May that had not been sent out.
Wow.
And there wasn't anybody that I could tell this to except you. And so I knew that.
How disappointing.
That's right. And then Lash, who I liked very much, spent an inordinate amount of time in Betty's office. And I began to think, even though I didn't have any proof, that there was some kind of a coup d'etat going on, but I had no reason to believe what it was. And then it all came together when I discovered that Betty was not sending my work out, that there were a lot of things that I would share with her regarding grievance and confidential matter that was somehow getting over to central administration, and I couldn't understand that. And then, of course,
what a disappointment.
So that's then I finally figured out that I needed to do something to buy some time. So I went to, I don't know who I went to, Bob Banks, who was, I think, very fair. Luann Simon was not fair. David Scott was not fair. And Biagi, I think, was a disaster.
Really?
But anyhow, I talked to some woman. It must have been Bob Banks. Because Bob Banks really was, I thought, my immediate supervisor.
Right.
If I was to have one. And he said, well, since you were sick for 3 months, why don't we extend your stay in the grievance office for 3 months? And I thought, good. That's when I decided that I would write this, do this research. I had done it all. I just hadn't written it up. And so that was my plan. That was my swan song. And then I decided that I had just about enough of Michigan State and that I would retire. But I didn't want to. And I was a little threatened about going back to medical school because I had been away from them for 5 years. And even though I taught a class on a regular basis, medicine is so dynamic, I was intimidated and threatened that I would not be able to keep up with the new physicians who were coming in. There was just too much that I thought I had to learn. In retrospect, that probably wasn't true. And then also, during the time that my father died,
oh, that's too
I was
bad.
engaged to a man who died. And I thought the best thing for me to do is get the hell out of here. So that's what I said to you, that it would be difficult for me to remember all this stuff.
Well, you've remembered quite a bit. I was...
Yeah.
Because you... The,
anyhow, and I set up... in an effort to help the future SEO, and I don't know, Betty threw them away or whatever, I have a binder for as many colleges that sent me their evaluation procedures. I set that up for future reference.
So we have a series of binders with those things and bylaws for every department and college.
Yeah, I did that.
Okay. Excellent. That's very helpful. Many of these things are online, but not everyone. Okay.
Yeah.
Many times I can find things online, but sometimes I can't, and I need to go back to those binders, and we have, must be 3-4 feet. Of these blue binders with all the bylaws and RPT procedures. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. But of course, we weren't online then, so
right.
This must be quite different now. Tell me, well, after you finish asking me all your questions, I'd like to know how things are now.
Okay, I'll do that in just a second. That'd be just fine. I think you sort of went through everything. I was going to ask you what. And you can tell me, I already said it, but if you had any comments about what you thought were your sort of main accomplishments, I think you spoke, but...
Pretty much the evaluation process,
mm-hmm.
And the importance of faculty, all faculty, deans and so forth, understanding that there is a grievance tool.
Mm-hmm.
That should be used early in the game so that you can resolve a lot of these difficulties in the department.
That's also certainly my philosophy, so I, so that is kind of continuing that tradition. I think you spoke to your thoughts about some of your disappointments or weaknesses, but I don't know if you want to summarize that differently.
Well, the weaknesses of my naivety, because there was only Betty and myself in the office, and probably familiarity is a dangerous thing, and I was basically a very outgoing, open, and friendly person. I probably told him too much of my own personal life. And it wasn't very helpful. Because I was naive, because all my life I've been in health care. And there is a... It just never occurred to me that a secretary would be my undoing. You know, I've always trusted my secretary, I've trusted physicians, they've trusted me, and it was like, I just couldn't believe it.
In your report that you issued July 1, 1990 to President DiBiagio and Provost Scott, you have a whole chapter on recommendations, and one of the things you spoke about was the role of the provost office in light of the grievance procedure.
Yes, that they should stay out of the grievance procedure and let it take care of itself.
And you saw, your comments are that you feel they were interfering too much and...
They did. And a lot they would not have known if Lash LaRue hadn't run over there and told them. And John Henderson was another problem. And
I knew him a little, but in what way was he a problem?
Well, I'm not sure. There was some kind of an ism, whether it was racism or sexism, because I'm a mulatto, and I'm pretty fair looking. And so I've grown up in black and white communities simultaneously all my life. So I've never had any real difficulties regarding racism. But so it must be sexism. I don't know what it was. But the Old Boys Network was really, really at work. I didn't know that there was so much displeasure at my original appointment. It just never occurred to me that since I knew I was competent, that anyone would see me as anything other than competent. But apparently, John Henderson and a few other people, and I don't know if Lash LaRue was part of that or not, but anyhow, and Bolton Ferency, all these men were having regular meetings and discussions about me the whole 5 years. And so they were plotting and planning my demise from the day I started. So anyhow, that's all things that I finally found out. So there wouldn't have been anything I could do about it anyhow, except try to engage their cooperation. And so they were fairly cooperative. Now, there were things that I did that were not in my best interest. As often I was tardy in getting to faculty affairs meetings because I worked so hard. And I would be busy doing something and forget what time it was.
Did you try to make the ACFA meetings? Or?
Everyone.
Okay.
But I felt guilty because it was just across the street. I felt guilty of I could have done better about that.
Did when you started doing it, did you get some, I don't know if I want to say training, but some orientation to what the job would entail from your predecessor or from Dr. Banks or a little of both? Or?
No. But I really didn't need any because, like I said, even though the setting was different, the skills that were required were things that I had done for many, 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 many years. So I didn't feel what I needed training in was the politics. I didn't know anything about the politics.
You hadn't been involved in academic governance or?
No. And I didn't realize that they're as ruthless as the government. My goodness. Because in medicine, there's politics in medicine.
Right.
But they fight a little bit more openly. In addition to which, they don't bother people who are doing their job. And I was doing my job, so I was never involved. I would sit in meetings and watch the physicians go after each other. But they didn't bother my church at all. So I didn't really pay much attention. And I got over that grievance office. I'm telling you. But see, again, we'll never know if a lot of this was stirred up in my own office. We'll never know that.
You've been very helpful, and I really appreciate. You asked me a question a minute ago about what are things like currently. When I don't know how much you kept track of the.
I didn't at all.
Okay.
The last thing I want to hear of was that.
Okay. Well, I need to tell you one thing about what I, so Dr. Rubner decided to retire, and they advertised the position. I applied. There was some process for both UCFA and Dr. Banks to do some interviewing. I don't actually recall much more about that, but I had been fairly regularly serving as counsel in the 90s, as I think I mentioned to you. I know I was either on a panel or presiding officer for a case during your time.
I think I remember you. And I think I was also very impressed.
Thank you. And then I did something similar to that during the short period of time that Lash served his second stint, what you were just referring to. And so when Mike Rubner came in, I was doing some occasional work, and it just kind of grew, quite frankly. I had, coming out of labor relations, dispute resolution, similar to how you were describing your story, was something that made a little bit of sense. And so in a fair amount of the 90s, I ended up, but I stopped being on panels or presiding officer, and I started to agree to be counsel. And there actually was a point towards the end of the 90s where Bruce Miller and I were frequently there with different clients, but him representing an administrator and I a grievant, a faculty member. I enjoyed the challenge of facing Bruce and also Jim Pochin.
Oh, yeah. Of course, Jim and I were quite close in radiology.
Both of them frequently would represent administrators, and I would represent a faculty member. And so I got to know the office a little bit from doing that work, and so I decided to apply, and I took the position.
Oh, well, congratulations. That's wonderful.
I'm starting my fifth year, and I actually soon have to make a decision whether or not to go through a five-year review. So that's kind of fascinating, your comments about that. During the sort of last few years of Dr. Rubner's time, he had an unfortunate situation with two gentlemen who filed a lot of grievances.
Oh, really?
Quite a few. And when I...
What were they complaining about?
To tell you the truth, it sort of, in both cases, started with a real problem and maybe a mistake made by an administrator. But these guys couldn't just sort of leave directing that issue, but kind of got carried away. And so when I came, and Mike Rubner had made a decision. There's some things that there are procedures of how to do stuff, and then there's things that I don't say we invent, but we come up with ways that we think to handle it. And Michael had come up with a system of if you had multiple grievances, that the second and third would simply be in kind of a queue line.
Uh-huh.
And
that
you,
makes sense. It
makes some sense, except when you have somebody who keeps filing grievances repetitively, that you end up. So when I started, there were 48 cases in the system, and half were these two gentlemen.
Oh my goodness! I didn't have anything like that.
And it was it really was quite frustrating to Michael. As I say, I think in both cases, there at the beginning there might have been real issues, but then they were just kind of, I don't want to say frivolous, but but many of these weren't real cases.
Yeah.
And so it took me about a year and a half to work all of those cases out of the system and get it down to more manageable kind of workload. It drove Michael wild. So I'm holding the annual report, which is online, but it shows that last year we settled 18 cases. Nine of them were informally, and seven were hearings. And I would say that about seven hearings a year is what I've had for my 4 years.
Uh-huh.
So that seems, looking back at the other annual reports, as I said, one purpose behind doing these interviews is to try to do a little in-house institutional history on the process.
I think that's wonderful.
Because it hadn't been done. And so I started looking at the annual reports that you and your predecessors and successors did. And there's some variation, and I've got to try to do some numbers to look at. But for example, you mentioned salary. I would say of these 18 settled cases, 9, half of them are about promotion tenure. So, if you're looking at it that way, but I was going to say pure salary is a very small amount of those cases. We also now track number of inquiries and number of conferences or meetings. And the inquiries was 240 and the conferences was 273. So very little gets to hearings. When you look at the conferences for last year, 123 different faculty and 73 different administrators.
That's good.
So that activity is somewhat similar, I think, to prior years. Maybe a little bit more emphasis on informal resolution and maybe a little more time with administrators than had been done before. Similar to what you just said, I think that sometimes we can resolve these without getting to hearing, and so I try to put some emphasis there. But the particulars here, as I mentioned, I was trying to catch up to the prior FGOs. I think, thanks to you, now I did get to talk to more than half. I missed two who have passed away. I don't have that list in front of me. One second. There, I'm back. See, I talked to Mike. I talked to Michael Harrison, who was the first, and I interviewed Bruce Miller. I interviewed Lance LaRue a number of years ago. I did a couple, not FGOs, but people who were involved in helping create it, which was Bob Banks and a gentleman, Les Hyman, who... He was an FGO, but he was involved in the sort of creation of the original process. But I did not get a chance to interview Fred Williams.
Oh, I forgot about him.
And he had served for about a year and a half.
Yeah. He's from was in the College of Religion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what happened to him? He's a nice guy.
He since passed away, but I just before I started working on this, like last summer or something, and then Gordon Thomas hadn't done it very long, but for about 6 months right before he was the FGO, and he passed away. But now I have been able to talk to you, LaRue, Miller, and Harrison. So, and as I say, Dr. Banks and a couple other faculty, and I'm hoping to have a few short questions to a couple of the administrators about the process. But the main point I said was just simply not about cases, but just we are somewhat unique in having this rather formalized grievance procedure in a non-union setting. With a staff with a faculty member doing a certain part of their job. Now, I do have one other question if I could ask you. My sense is that the job has always been described as it should be a faculty member who is seen by others and sees themselves as a faculty member rather than an administrator only, and still does some work as a faculty member. And from the others that I've chatted with, some people have continued to do some teaching or research while FGO, but never had it sort of formalized that it was a certain percent. I was curious how it was during your 5 years. Did you teach at all from medicine during that time, or?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, okay.
It was at a minimum.
Right, and so is mine. I've been teaching one or two credits a semester. I mean, a very small.
You know, and I think that's fine. It's just too much going on to be.
And as you know, I think we chatted the other day, partly what's funny is the unpredictability.
That's right.
I really wasn't planning on being at the office today, but there was a person who thought they were being tenured and just discovered they're not, and they were pretty much like, I really want to meet with you right away and talk.
It's urgent when all of a sudden the light comes on in their head.
Yeah. So you just have to set things aside. So, well, I really do appreciate your willingness to do the conversation. And if I have some more questions on particular things, if I'm trying to do something up, I assume you wouldn't mind my getting in touch with you.
Oh, no, feel free to contact me. I would like a copy of whatever you put together.
I absolutely will send you that.
That would be nice. I really enjoyed this, and I got a lot off my chest.
Great. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I wish you luck, and I think you should continue.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right, dear. Have a nice week.
You too. Take care. Have a nice weekend.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.